I was like, Scott, what do I play when I solo? I don't know what to say. I'm a groove player. I don't know how to solo. He goes, just play melodies, man. Like, pick a melody and play it on the drums, you know? And I was like, that's the easiest, best answer to drum soloing I've ever heard in my life.
Go. Let's go. What is up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Sitting with me today is an amazing artist, drummer, producer, overall soulful, funky guy. You know him from Lettuce, Break Science, Pretty Lights. Make a ton of noise for Adam Deitch. Deitch. Deitch.
Thanks for having me, man.
Thanks for being here, dude. Stoked to get to hang.
Yes, LA. I love it.
So, man, you have had an amazing career. I've been following you for a long time. I was a fan way before we made friends.
Thank you, man.
And one thing that I really admire about you is you have been able to have all these incredible projects, but at the same time, you have made a name for yourself. This is a loaded question, but how do you make a name for yourself? Like, how do you make Adam Deitch a prominent thing? Not just Lettuce and Break Science and all these projects, but Adam Deitch.
Oh, man, that's a great question. My thing is just hustle and play the music that I love. And every project that I do, I just try to make sure it's a piece of my soul and close to my heart. And I've been blessed to be around a lot of great artists, to be growing up in New York City, and I just been inspired by a lot of people and had a lot of help along the way and great team behind me, and I get to continue doing all this.
Did you always have the team? Like, at what point did you get the team?
I didn't always have the team.
Obviously.
In the early 2000s.
You didn't have a team when you were at Berkeley? And
no, not then. But I got I had some really great friends, especially in the Lettuce guys. And my good friend Eric Krasno was a businessman, entrepreneur, like just super, taught me so much about the music industry and how to kind of navigate and kind of do what I want to do. And, at first I wanted to play big gigs with big artists, and I got to do a little bit. I was on tour with Wyclef for 3 years, Wyclef Jean, and did some Fuji stuff and did 3 years with Average White Band, classic funk band, and 3 years with John Scofield. And, between those like 10 years, they were like all 3 year tenures. And they all knew I had a band. They all knew I had Lettuce. And I think Wyclef was the last like gig I was on. And he was like, man, go do your band, man. Like,
nice.
Out of love, And I was like, you know what? You're right. And I got to really concentrate. So that was around 06, 07. And that's when Lettuce really started to become the main thing,
Well, Break Science came next. When did the Adam Deitchness kind of be an addition to Lettuce?
Well, the Break Science thing, I started in New York doing the Adam Deitch project.
Okay.
And luckily I had this place called the Blue Note to kind of make that happen. Shout out to Alex from the Blue Note.
We love Alex Curlin.
Yeah, Curlin's my homie.
Our boy.
And I was doing the late nights there on the weekends, and I was able to put bands together of the baddest cats, my own version of the Jam Jam.
Yep.
and I got to play with some amazing players. And when you call them and say, hey, you want to play the Blue Note? They're like, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's when I started doing the Adam Deitch project. And I got to do a lot of, play with a lot of great musicians through there. At one point I had Robert Glasper on keys. I had Mark Kelly from the Roots on bass. I had, like a killer band, Robert had just moved to New York, and Casey Benjamin. It was almost like the Glasper band.
Yeah, for sure.
And I started doing that. And then the band started, everyone couldn't make this thing and they couldn't make that thing after a while. And I was like, let me try to do more of a smaller group. And I met Boram Lee, who's an amazing keyboard player, producer, and, a master of Ableton Live and how to loop and do all that cool stuff that I didn't know how to do. And we started Break Science in about 08. And at first it started off as Adam Deitch and Break Science. And eventually he was putting in so much work, it just became Break Science.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. So that really helped out with people going, oh, okay, that, That's Adam, you know, from Lettuce, and he's doing this now. And,
yeah.
And so we did a lot of touring, and then I ended up getting the call to do the Pretty Lights thing.
Yep.
And that was amazing, and he was so gracious in introducing me to his massive, you know, EDM crowd that I didn't really know that well, you know?
Yeah.
And he was like, everybody, this is Adam Deitch, you know? And like, yeah, Red Rocks in front of 10,000 people, you know? So he was really gracious with his crowd and kind of introducing me. And and at the next point, it was just, I was producing at the same time and selling beats to, you know, Talib Kweli and Pharoah Monch and Redman. And I had a production team with Eric Krasno called the Fire Department.
It's so good.
So yeah, between all that, and then the next step was to do my own records, which I, the past couple of years, I have two solo records, Adam Deitch Quartet, and I have two kind of beat records with my production stuff.
Which is so cool. Okay, so the Modern Drummer Festival, that was when I discovered you. 2010, eight? When was that?
Yeah, around 10.
Yeah, 2010.
Like yeah.
And I mean, especially at that time, the Modern Drummer Festival, that's the biggest thing in drumming.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing even close to second that I could think of in that moment. I mean, you had the VHS or the DVD, you know, like it was a big deal. It was a huge production.
I was so nervous. Yeah.
I know in the beginning, actually, and I revisited it recently.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell when you're talking on the mic after your first performance. Yeah. Dude, that's a huge spotlight.
Yeah.
Huge stage. So how did you get that Modern Drummer performance slot?
Mm-hmm.
And then how did your life change after that?
When I was with Schofield, we played NAMM Show, and we that's where I got all my endorsements, and I got with Tama and Zildjian and Vader and Evans. And they were all really cool, and I got along with all the reps, and they were always fighting for me to get into these festivals, and like, you know, because we just got along, we were homies, you know. And I believe it was Aaron from Tamo, he's now with Evans now.
Yeah.
He was very adamant in like pushing to get me on in things, you know.
Wow.
So I'm pretty sure it was either Zildjian or Tam at the time that kind of put my name in there, and I got in.
That's amazing. Because what level of drum stardom were you before that?
I mean,
like up and coming, right?
Like, yeah, totally. You know,
because I feel like getting on that Modern Drummer Festival makes you like a household name in drums.
Yeah.
The drummer world.
The
right?
Schofield thing was very helpful. And that was around like 03, 02, 03, 04, maybe. And, you know, obviously, you know, the drummers he's had in his bands, you know, are
the best,
pretty iconic cats. Yeah. So that was really helpful. And and that kind of led to the Modern Drummer thing. But yeah, after it was incredible. And you know, now I have the Deitch Academy, which I'm teaching and like, you know, doing that kind of stuff. And thanks to that festival and some of the other ones like PASIC that really were, you know, helped out. And yeah, I'm just honored to do those sort of things. And my parents are both music teachers.
Yep.
They're both great musicians, great drummers. They both went to Berklee College of Music. They met there. And they had me at, you know, as kids, they were both like 22, 23 years old when they had me. So I grew up in a drum house, you know, you know, two kids. I didn't even own a drum set till I was like 18, you know, 17.
You had your parents' kids.
My mom's kit.
Yeah. Oh, it was always your mom's kit?
Usually my mom's kit, yeah. She had like the nice Gretsch snare and like, that she still won't let me take on gigs. She's like, come on, not bringing it out of the house. You know?
Come on, mom.
Come on, mom.
She's like, bring the mics over. You can track
right. I can record it there. Yeah. That's it. But, man, that snare pops. So yeah, I the idea of teaching and spreading knowledge in the easiest way, in the most non-confusing, most non-ego way, is that's what I learned from them. So I love to teach, and I love to do clinics and that sort of stuff.
How do you think your parents, I don't want to say got you to play drums, but I know that like as a drummer, I would love for my future children to play drums. So how do I make sure that I actually present it to them in the right way and not like force it on them, right?
My dad and you are very similar in the love that you guys have for drumming.
Nice.
How happy it makes you.
Yeah.
And that is the most important thing that will get the kid through the reading and the paradiddles and all that stuff. If you first show the kid the love that you have and the excitement that you have for your favorite music, how passionate you are,
yeah,
how much fun the drums are. And the kid sees that. And I saw my dad, like, you know, playing, and he would put me on the drums and he'd get on the guitar or the piano and we'd just play a little bit and jam, you know, and have little jam jams in my house.
That's so
growing
cool.
up. And mom would be on percussion playing congas or shakers. And I was just excited because they were smiling. And like, I remember them sitting me down, putting on like, you know, Coltrane Love Supreme and go check out Elvin, like check out his left hand. And they were all excited about me listening to Elvin, you know. And the same thing with like Tower of Power and their favorite band, Cold Blood, which is like a funk band from the Bay Area. And Earth, Wind & Fire, they're like diehard Earth, Wind & Fire, Stevie Wonder, and Donny Hathaway heads. So just their excitement, I would say, you know, some people like they start the kid with lessons and they kind of bombard them with too much technical stuff at first.
Right.
And for me, it was like, let's just have fun and play. Put your hands like, you know, just cross your hands and play, you know, let's have fun, you know? So that's really what they did. And that's why I still enjoyed it. And people are like, aren't you burnt out, man? It's like, I don't get burnt out, man.
Yeah.
I'm playing music I love. And this is, you know, it's a continuation of my childhood almost.
For sure. You're clearly super proficient because I know you're composing for like all these projects at once, right? So when you're in, I guess, composer mode or creation mode, are you intentionally being like Lettuce or Deitch Quartet or Break Science? Or are you just making something and you're like, that fits with this?
I'm actually intentionally doing it because I think of not only the musicians involved, their strengths, their weaknesses, how I could play to their strengths, you know, musically, but also the audiences that come, you know, I'm imagining like, you know, Deitch Quartet, you know, like in a jazz club, like, you know, Blue Note or Yoshi's and, you know, what is that crowd going to hear? Like what kind of vibe would they want to hear?
Yeah.
You know, and that excites me, that creates the flow where it's like, I could write, you know, 10 tunes right away. Cause when I start envisioning the crowd and
the environment,
you know, and the musicians like, you know, being in their wheelhouse, throwing them a, you know, fastball down the middle, you know, with some, you know, the way that they play. So a lot of it is, you know, talking to other musicians and talking to, you know, my guys and Lettuce, you know, what are your favorite records? Like who are your favorite players?
Yeah.
Why? You know, I'm always like on this interview kind of vibe with them. And after knowing all that, then when you write for them, kind of, it's like, oh wow, like, you know, they're like, yeah, this is it. We're going to play this, you know, this tune. So, you know, I've gotten to, you know, they've allowed me to, you know, bombard them with demos. I do it all in Pro Tools and I, you know, my dad plays guitar and keyboards and he showed me just enough where I could, you know, kind of write, you know, pretty decent demos. So when they hear it and if it's in the right zone, we're going to play it and put it on a record. So that I just really enjoy composing.
That's super fun. What do you think is the secret to having a band last so long?
You know, having some understanding of psychology, of human psychology.
Yeah.
And what, you know, how to keep people together and understanding what people are going through in their lives and that kind of thing. It's more than just getting up there and playing and a high five and see you later. You know, it's like, what are you dealing with? How's your kids? How's your life? How's your girlfriend? What's going on? And all that stuff. And when people get in a fight, say there's a little quarrel going on with you guys, I'll go behind each other's back and go, you know, he was saying he loves you. You know, he was saying he's you're like, I'll
make
like,
it nice.
I'll create a situation where like, you know, they're like, oh, he said that. Oh, cool, man. Like,
soften
you know,
it up.
Soften it up, you know? Yeah. And it's like, we're all here cause we love music and you know, this is a dream. Like other people, you know, they're on a great gig and they have, you know, they're paying their rent and their car bills and then the gig's over, you know, the label doesn't have the budget for the band anymore and they're changing a band. And
yeah.
So we're lucky that we don't have to deal with that. This is job security, you know? So guys, let's all get along and keep this going, you know? And I got to give a shout out to Jesus Coombs, our bass player, who's been like kind of like the visionary since the beginning. Like, we can do this, guys. We really can. You know, like that we could be in a band and tour. We're like a band. We got to get gigs. We got to like play with famous artists to survive.
And he's,
like, no, we're going to do this band thing. It's going to work, you know?
Wow.
So, I, you know, having that, him being so solidified in his vision. Not sure how it's going to happen, but he just knew it was going to happen. And
he believed it.
He believed it.
And he got you guys to believe it.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, here we are 35 years later, still playing shows. Yeah.
That's incredible, dude. 35 years. It's like you're practically in the Rolling Stones. In difficult times, because obviously in happy times, in good times, it's easy to keep a group together. Mm-hmm. But in difficult times, or even with, because you got a 6-piece band, right? Six of you.
Six, yeah. In, it used to be like 9, but yeah. Yeah, we used to have a lot of horns.
In Lettuce, with having 6 people, even if it's just one person going through a hard time, mm-hmm. outside of the band, right? Yeah. Could be personal stuff.
Yeah.
How do you keep them involved? How do you help them get through it? And how do you give yourself patience in case it takes them a while to get out of that?
My mom, when she was getting her teaching degree to be a music teacher, she studied early childhood psychology and lets you know that everything that happened to you as a child is going to affect you as an adult. Mm. And I got to learn a lot about that. She was going to college when I was in high school. She was getting her doctorate, you know, her master's plus. And I was kind of studying her stuff with her, and I learned a lot. So not only are they battling what, you know, whatever traumas they went through as a child, but it's also whatever they're going through with their girlfriend or their life. Yeah. And so just asking questions, being a human being, being a friend, and being a good listener. People want to feel heard.
Yeah.
As you know, yeah. Doing a podcast. So
Please listen.
People want to be heard, man. And it's like just sitting there and listening and shutting up and letting someone talk, you know? And
yeah.
So I find that, you know, the communication levels is what keeps groups together, you know, all relationships.
Yeah. That's definitely something that happens in any form of life, whether it's in your family life or mm-hmm. your band life. Your business life, mm-hmm. whatever it may be, it's all just relationship based.
Absolutely, man.
Keeping people happy is, I feel like, my main job in running Jam Card. That's like, and I feel like I've taken on the responsibility of, I want to keep my team happy, but I also want to keep all of our members happy, which mm-hmm. is incredibly difficult.
Yeah. There's a lot of people involved, you know, like we have sound guys, we have, you know, monitor guys and, you know, tour managers and, everyone has to, you got to check on everybody. Make sure everyone's cool. You know, that's running a business.
Yeah. Cause if someone's upset, you don't, you know, attend to their needs, I guess. Right. Mm-hmm. You have to, or mm-hmm. else like, cause that sound person doesn't have to be the bass player, the guitar player, the singer or whatever, you know,
right.
That can be the merch person, anyone that's in, exactly. you're moving together.
Mm-hmm. We're all out here. We're all away from our families. We're all away from our loved ones.
Yeah,
out on the ship, you know, on the bus, you know, doing it. So you just you gotta be a good human and check on people, you know, as much as you can.
So yeah, dude. So I love how at least from the outside looking in, like how you're running your life. It feels super fun. Different projects. I'm going to do this now. I'm going to do this now. I'm going to do this now. Jumping like tonight, you got a producer DJ set.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to go to. I'm excited to see.
Right on.
And I just saw you. Where were we? We were in Miami.
It was at the band show in Miami.
At the Miami band show.
Yes, yes.
And you were playing with the quartet.
Mm-hmm.
So sick. Like, and so I love how you do that. I feel like I want to eventually get more playing back into my life. Mm-hmm. And I like this approach of like, because I'm a collaborator. Right. I don't do anything alone. I mm-hmm. love doing things with people.
Absolutely.
Like, and I feel like, yeah, you're the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, shout out to, you know, Gideon, my friend that runs all the band shell events.
Yeah.
And it's people like that go, hey, man, we'd love to have you do this thing. And it's always been great. And I've have a lot of great relationships with a lot of promoters. And over the years that... No, I'm a hard worker. If I'm showing up, I'm going to give the crowd the best show possible.
Yeah.
I'm going to be there on time. There's going to be no shenanigans. You know, it's like, we're going to be about the music and make it happen.
Absolutely.
And so I got to do, you know, the Adam Deitch Quartet, which is like kind of like what I envisioned doing jazz clubs. But here I am at like this festival at the band show opening for the Disco Biscuits, you know, like it was wild with all these like hippies. But, you know, I was like, hey, it's great. And then I think the next day I did a producer set, which is, I'm not calling a DJ set. I'm from New York.
Yeah.
I have enormous respect for the art of DJing.
Yeah.
And I grew up around some of the best and, you know, like the Executioners and, you know, obviously the Scratch Pickles from out here. And like, so I'm not DJing. So I'm basically arranging a lot of my tracks and some of my other favorite producers to put it together and kind of and play percussion and play keyboards on top of it. So live, so I get to play little keys live, and that's a lot of fun for me. So yeah, I'm calling it a producer set because
I like that.
Yeah, it's my tracks and some other homies' tracks.
Yeah,
and it's not like I'm actually selecting in the moment. You know, I'm putting together a set. You know, just like you would with a band, and I get to actually play and perform and bring my friends up like you tonight, and play some percussion and jam out. You know, and add that layer of funky live stuff over the tracks, you know, with the big bass booming underneath in the track. So it's a fun concept.
Super fun. You're going straight from these into double drumming dates with Dennis Chambers.
Yeah.
Come on.
Dude. The God.
What's that going to be like?
it's a really wild full circle moment for me.
And, yeah.
You know, I think of all my successes and failures and this is just one moment that I am looking forward to, and just to be such a fan of him and watch his career from the beginning and playing along with his VHS cassettes. That's how old I am.
Yep.
I had the VCR and the Dennis Chambers videos and the Omar Hakim videos. And
same.
And I was in the basement with the TV on my mom's kit probably, and playing along for hours and hours, and you know, Modern Drummer, and like cutting out the picture out of the Modern Drummer and put it on the wall, you know, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And
Kit.
Yeah, the Yellow Kid. And he's just been a constant inspiration in my life. And I kind of pattern like how I love his confident way of playing. And he's very funny guy. He's like, you know, he's always kind of mischievous in a way, you know. So, you know, between him and you know, what he's provided my life to actually be next to him and paying tribute to the great Russell Batiste, who's also an amazing influence on me. If you don't know Russell Batiste, he's one of the funkiest drummers that ever did it, from New Orleans, represents that swamp New Orleans funk in a way that no one has done, you know, even close to what Zigaboo did with the Meters.
Yeah.
And Russell used to fall asleep in Zigaboo's bass drum as a child during Meters rehearsals.
Wow.
Like literally, like in the kick, he would lay in the kick, you know?
Insane.
Yeah, so that was really cool to hear, you know, and he was a huge Dennis fan, so we used to talk about Dennis, and so me and Dennis are going out to pay tribute to him. And
it's beautiful.
And we have the great George Porter, who's, you know, still playing extremely funky, and it's going to be a great tour.
And George Porter put this together?
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
What is your relationship like with Dennis Chambers?
He's he's a music guy. He's got a archive of music that a lot of people haven't heard. Live shows, Billy Cobham things, like random shows that he's played that no one know about. And when you hang out with him, he likes to make sure you check it out. So yeah, he puts his headphones on you and he'll just watch your reaction, you know, and that's what we do when we hang. And it's just, he'll do that for 5 hours straight.
Wow.
He has so much, you know. I'll be like, Dennis, I'm late for the gig. Like, you know, we had dinner before one of my gigs in DC, and he just like kept going, barrage of music. But, you know,
listen to this
P-Funk show, this Mike Stern show, this McLaughlin gig, this thing, you know, like, and it's like, wow, you know. And then it's inspiring, and it makes you realize how vast his career is. And you know, people know this, you know, people know like only a small piece of what you've done in life, you know?
Yeah.
But when you hang out with a cat and they start playing you all these different things, you're like, oh, I see how wide this spectrum is of what you've accomplished, you know?
Incredible. Well, I can't wait to see the videos of you guys double drumming.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
So Schofield.
Yeah.
Played with Schofield for years. Mm-hmm. And I know he's played with Lettuce too and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's your relationship like with John Schofield?
He's like an uncle, you know, like an older brother. He's just the coolest cat.
Yeah.
So funny and upbeat. Like, and it's rough. I don't know if, you know, for anyone that hasn't toured Europe with a jazz artist, you're up at 5 a.m. You're at the airport at 6, your flight's at 7. and it's a lot of work, you know? And then of course at night, you're in Paris, you want to go out, you want to see Paris, you know, you want to see, you know, wherever you're at. And so you're up at night doing the thing, and then you have 3 or 4 hours of sleep, and then you got to get up, and I'm miserable in the mornings. I'm not really a morning guy, you know. I'm just, and he's cracking jokes and telling you stories about jazz musicians and like wild that I can't repeat, you know, like he knows everything about everybody, and it's all in, you know, to make me laugh, like every story. So we're in the airport pushing carts and pedal boards and drums, and he's telling stories about people, and
it's so you cool.
know, yeah, and we're in the back of the bus hanging, like, and he was so politely suggesting, like, you know, check out this Jack DeJohnette thing, man, like, you know, like Roy, man, you know. I was like, Scott, what do I play when I solo? I don't know what to say. I'm a groove player. I don't know how to solo. He goes, just play melodies, man. Like, pick a melody and play it on the drums, you know? And I was like, that's the easiest, best answer to drum soloing I've ever heard in my life.
Wow.
You know, it's like, whether it's a Monk tune or Happy Birthday, just play it on the kit and phrase it how you want, you know? And it's kind of cleared up and demystified soloing for me in a lot of ways.
That's so cool. Teaching you how to sing with drums in your head as your approach.
Exactly. You know,
and so he's significantly impacted your playing.
Absolutely. My entire life, my career.
Wow.
Endorsements, meeting, you know, I'm not a straight ahead jazz player at all. Yeah. I love it. I respect it. I just studied funk my entire life. You know what I mean? Funk and hip hop are my thing. So, but by playing with him, I became friends with so many of the jazz community, you know, from like Brian Blade, Josh Redman, and I got to meet Ron Carter, and you know, and he's introduced me to that whole side of the game. And it's great because I get to be this kind of like in between guy who, like, I know a lot of the straight ahead cats and like that live that life. And I also know a lot of like the R&B funk side. And then as far as being growing up in New York and doing the hip hop producer thing, the hip hop side. So kind of putting it all together and kind of just being involved with all those communities. And then with Pretty Lights was the EDM community, another thing. So, you know, bridging that gap is kind of like something I'm blessed to do. And I just owe Schofield so much for that.
That's so cool. Are you wearing an MF Doom shirt?
Yep. Straight up.
Did you work with MF Doom?
Yep.
What was that?
I didn't get in the studio with him, but at one point, Talib Kweli was kind of like almost managing us, or like, you know, telling all his friends to you know, get beats off of us and me and Kraz. And we did a song called Fly the Knot, and Kweli was on it. And he said, I'm getting MF Doom on this. And we're like, wow. You know, and then he just sent it back with the vocals, you know, mixed this. And we're like, okay, great.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
I can't wait to listen to that.
Yeah, it's cool because I have live horns on it. Rashawn Ross, you know Rashawn?
Yeah, of course.
Great trumpet player, Dave Matthews.
Dave
band.
Matthews, yeah. Love Rashawn. Yeah,
he was in Soul Live and Lettuce also, and a big part of our team. And he's actually on that, played trumpet. I think I sampled him at a Soul Live recording session. He was in the other room, and I had set up my little Triton keyboard where I used to sample things on. I'm like, hey man, just play this thing for me, and he played it, and I ended up making a beat, and that's what became Fly the Knot with Kweli and MF Doom.
How did that work with you and Talib Kweli?
We're super super cool, man. He always looked out for us. He loves live music. He loves, you know, so he was one of the first guys to be sitting in with Lettuce and Soul Live and rocking and kind of legitimizing us in New York as, like, you know, if you're into hip hop, you'll love these guys.
Yeah.
And that was big for us. And he, you know, at one point, you know, I had a session one day where I was playing beats, and he's like, let me bring the homies over. And it's him, Pharoah Monch, and Mos Def, you know, and
so sick.
And yeah. And just, I'm sitting there like shaking, like what beat do I play for these guys? You know, but you know, that was him making that happen. So shout out to Talib Kweli, man. That's the homie for sure.
Wow. Any other standout stories from those days?
I mean, I was producing for 50 Cent, you know, and I used to go over to the G-Unit offices and he'd be over there, like, you know, lifting weights, you know, he's like lifting. Tony Yayo would like take my skateboard. I'm a skateboarder. You know, he would skate around the office. Yeah, radical dude. You know, like, and the guy that was bringing me over, my homie D Prosper, was like, man, just keep making hot stuff and keep bringing the CDs over. I was making burning CDs in my house.
Yeah.
And he says, keep coming with it. Keep, you know, once, twice, you know, a week, come over. I'm going to bring you in, play it for the guys right in front of their face. And I kept doing that for like a series of months. And finally, you know, 50 Cent, you know, here's this one track and he's lifting weights. He goes, is that live guitar? And I actually had Krasno like mixed way up on the thing, you know, one of my tracks. And I was like, yeah, it's live guitar. He goes, cool, cool, cool. And that was the track that became the first song on the album, Curtis, the one he went against Kanye, you know, face to face, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I just couldn't believe it. And that really helped out. And that ended up, you know, I was able to afford a space, like a nice production space in Brooklyn. And yeah, so shout out to 50 and the whole G-Unit crew.
Man, that's so cool. Mm. So what brought you to Denver?
It was a lot of things. The Pretty Lights thing was really huge.
Yeah.
And seeing how he did Red Rocks and he did it with a symphony and I was like, this is incredible. And I fell in love with it. And Lettuce was starting to grow and we worked closely with this promoter, Scott Morrill, who's an amazing guy. He does all the Red Rocks booking now and he owns Cervantes, my favorite club. And so basically he's like, man, if you ever move out here, I got you. Like, anywhere you want to play, whatever you want to do, like, I got, you know, I'm going to make it happen for you, you know? So he's been like my brother for, you know, almost, you know, 15 years, something like that. And yeah, my ex-girlfriend, she wanted to move there. And mm-hmm. She was like, you know, and I was like, okay, let's go. And I love it. I stayed. And, you know, it's a little slower than LA and New York.
Yep.
There's, you know, there's not a lot of records being made there. But what I like that I could do original music there. And it's kind of a religion for people to go to shows there. I noticed in New York, you have to beg, please come to my gig, you know? And they'll finally do, but Denver's like, we're all going. Oh, it's a new band. We're all going. It's a new producer. We're all going. And it's like this like wave of people that just want to be a part of the live music scene,
yeah.
You know, as just go there and dance and be a part of it. So that's what attracted me to it. So every, you know, everything I'm doing, every project, you know, I could feel it growing just from that Denver love, that Colorado love that they bring to it. So I really enjoy it.
That's so fun, man. I got to come out there with you.
Oh yeah. You got to do a show at Cervantes and do a hang and yeah.
Let's set that up.
Do a jam out there. Absolutely.
Let's get it. Yeah. I know we haven't launched Jam Card Denver yet.
We got to do it, man.
You're the first call.
Yeah. Well, me and Scott will make that happen. There's a lot of killing cats out there and we can bring some cats out there and kind of maybe involve some of like the electro elements. It's kind of, sometimes I call it the London of America.
Yeah.
Because it's got this real hybrid electronic, you know, hip hop meets funk live music kind of thing going on.
So, before we started the pod, we were talking and you said something to me that really struck a beat was you said, every city has a beat.
Yeah.
I love that. And, mm-hmm. and you were saying that goes into your approach too with Lettuce when you guys are on tour and you're playing all these different cities.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, part of being in a funk band, there's many different kinds of funk.
Yes.
It's not just one thing. And, like for instance, you know, let's start with New Orleans, you know, you have the second line, you got the meters, you have so many great musicians from there that created what we know today as funk music mm-hmm. and rock and roll, you know, they still say rolling down there, like from the original, you know, rock and roll comes from, oh, how was the gig? Oh, it was rolling, man. You know, so that's where rock and roll comes from. Like, yeah, Little Richard is from there, you know, like. So, you know, New Orleans has a beat. It's got a rhythm. It's got that thing. So when we go there, we, you know, bring George Porter up, bring up Terrence Higgins or any of the cats to play percussion, you know, bring that vibe. Same thing with like Washington, D.C. when we go there, the go-go thing. Go-go. There's no hip hop without go-go. You know, go-go was happening in the mid to late 70s. And a lot of the early hip hop that happened were samples of go-go beats, mm-hmm. you know, or just loops of go-go stuff. And, yeah, so when we go to, you know, go there, I reach out to, you know, some of the great percussionists that are there, and they come up and join us, and sometimes we'll do the whole show. Every city's got a thing, you know, and New York will have MCs like Pharoah Monch or Talib or whoever come up, and LA, same thing. We got the G-Funk out here, and, you know, and the Bay Area has got that sort of, like, you know, Latin funk kind of vibe. And, you know, Miami, as you were talking about, you know, very strong Cuban influence out mm-hmm. there. So just knowing the history and the rhythm of the city and the people that make that city special,
yeah.
and kind of involving that with Lettuce whenever we go. And that's what it's about.
So are you creating the Denver sound?
I mean, the Denver sound, it's a thing. Shout out to my friends, the Motet, you know, they're like, they've been out there for years doing funky stuff. And then you have a lot of the electronic stuff. So yeah, I'm just kind of making, you know, doing what I can in Denver, trying to create a, I don't know if it's the Denver sound or anything, but that'll be determined later, I guess.
I saw Jeff Basker just posted the guest list.
Yes.
And I saw your name on the guest list.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
I just went last night. Jeff and I started Lettuce.
Yeah.
And in, you know, the early days, me, him, and Eric.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I was in the Jeff Basker fusion trio at Berkeley.
Yeah.
And he was writing these really intense, funky fusion tunes that were like Chick Corea level tunes, and I knew this guy was special, you know.
Yeah.
I Steve Jenkins was a bass player, amazing bass player, lives out here now. And at a certain point, I was like, you gotta meet Krasno and Jesus and the rest of the guys at Smirnoff. And Jeff, you know, came right in and it was like, okay, guys. And he was like already like this musical director kind of vibe, you know, MD, you know. And he started like teaching us like really like hard Herbie tunes that we weren't, you know, we needed to be taught these tunes. Like he knew the chords, the hits, everything. And, you know, from, you know, Spankily, Palm Grease, Actual Proof, Spider, all those tunes that became part of our repertoire. He was kind of like teaching us these tunes, you know? And, you know, we did the first album together, and then, we all left school. I was in a hip hop band. I got signed to Interscope. It was a whole different thing called Fatbag that, you know, and everything kind of got, you know, crazy at that point. We all moved to New York, and Jeff, you know, he's just a genius. And he started playing me his tunes he was writing. Oh, this guy's a genius, you know? And so last night I don't know if everyone knows, but Jeff has won Producer of the Year at the Grammys. And
oh yeah.
Thanked Jay-Z and Chick Corea from the stage, you know, so gangster. So he's been an amazing influence on all of us. And just to see him last night doing his tunes, piano, vocal, and every songwriter in LA that really cares about the craft was there. And
yeah.
It was really cool. And, you know, it was a clinic. It was a songwriting clinic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, I wish I would have gone. Yeah. I saw that. We were messaging back and forth. We haven't met each other yet. We're just, IG friends.
Yeah. He's a great dude, man. Yeah. And he's a wealth of information.
Yeah. He seems incredible. It's so cool I feel like you just think of him as a massive pop writer.
Yeah.
Writing these huge pop and hip hop songs.
Yeah.
So to hear about him actually be like having the MD vibe in his blood, being Muso, doing the Herbie tunes back then.
And all the funk, James Brown and Prince. He is a Prince like encyclopedia.
Yeah.
He taught us so much about just music. And I remember I think we, for Thanksgiving, I was like, you want to come to my parents' house? He's like, yeah, cool. He came to my parents' house and I think he played the piano in my parents' living room. And we always had like a baby grand there, and my mom and dad heard him. They go, your friend's special. He's different, you know? And they were right. And they were absolutely right.
They knew.
Yeah, they knew right away. Yeah.
How was the Zildjian 400th event?
The nervousness was only matched by the Modern Drummer. But it's what he said. Like, it was because, like, it's one thing to have, like, you know, rest in peace, Aaron Spears, and,
I know.
And you know, Sticks. Taylor, Antonio Sanchez, who was my Berkeley homie. We went to school together. So it was
one of
like,
the greatest drummers.
Yeah, you know, Justin Faulkner, like Branford, like, you know, it was, the list was crazy. And I was overwhelmed. But then you add Sheila E., Dennis, Omar, Eddie Bayers, you know, and Steve Smith. And they're like in this kind of like American Idol panel, like looking at you, you know, like you're being judged, you know, but they're just so happy to be honored, you know? And so I had to like, okay, you're just honoring, you're just paying respect. But man, I don't think I slept for like 3 days. Like, you know, the rehearsals, like, and then the hangs, you know, the drummer hangs, as you for know, sure. are the best, you know, drum community is the tightest of all the instrument communities.
Absolutely.
We just vibe, you know,
man.
Yeah, so it was incredibly nerve-wracking, especially during the show, you know, just seeing Dennis and Omar up there. You want to play your best. And I remember my ears weren't working. I'm going up stage and like the ears aren't working. So I had to play with no ears and like no monitor. And, you know, it was just kind of like one of those situations, you know. But I've been through it all. I've been through all the technical stuff. And at the end of the day, just like, just make a groove, man.
Yeah.
Make it feel good.
Yeah.
You know? So I vibed out with the musicians. And just, you know, kept my eyes on them and just acted like it was just the three of us in a room, four of us in a room. And,
yeah.
And just made it happen.
Man, I regret not going. Eric Lederman, our homie, invited me out and I was like, I should go. But for whatever, I had something. I couldn't go. And I was like, because so many homies were on the bill, too. It was just like a bill full of the homies.
Yeah.
And I'm especially bummed I didn't go because, I mean, who would have thought Aaron was going to pass, man?
Like, right.
Who would have thought? Like, we had just talked. He's one of those guys that's always checking in.
Absolutely, man.
How you doing, bro? Like, always checking in.
He was, like, hugging my parents, and, like, we hung out. Like, you know, it was, like, me, him, and Mom and Dad were just, like, hanging for, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
He was, like, so gracious with his time. And
oh, he's the best. Like,
the realist, you know, and that's why Usher put his kit, up
at the Super Bowl.
And because this guy was special. He wasn't... You know, he reached out and he really cared. His heart was big. And so, yeah, he's greatly missed, man. Like, you know, that was, and I'm so glad I got to spend that Zildjian 400 hanging with him and getting to spend some good quality time with him, right? You know, at that point. And also with the other guys, you know, and I learned so much and everyone watched each other's performances on the TV in the backstage, big TV with the stereo. So it was like, you know, bunch of drummers around. So you go back and everyone's clapping and, you know, it was
so just, cool.
It was great. It was camaraderie and it was frightening and it was all the things. So we did it.
I'm surprised you still get nervous.
Oh yeah. It never, if you're not nervous, you're not alive. You know, like.
Damn, I'm not alive then.
You don't get nervous, man?
Never.
Wow. You must have that gene that like, do you like. Like do thrill seeker stuff and
no,
like,
I don't
jump out of planes and stuff.
I know I hate that shit. I hate skydiving. I'll never do it. I don't want to scuba dive. I went snorkeling, had a panic attack.
Me too.
I'm not a thrill seeker, but with music, I guess that's my thrill. Like I'm super comfortable improvising.
Uh-huh.
And now with the jam is just a giant improv, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's moments, of course, of structured improv, but a lot of it is just like, what's going to happen?
Right.
Like,
that's beautiful. Improv is beautiful. I mean, it can be scary also.
It of course can be scary, but I guess I feel like it's my job to put the best people on stage around me that I love and respect and look up to. And like, you know, that being the paint, I guess, with the canvas being the stage and just being like, all right, this is going to be great. There's a great mix of people, which is, of course, not always, doesn't always happen, but even... The jam has grown to, we did it this summer in front of 60,000 people.
I saw that. I saw the videos.
It's an improv, right? It was with Free Nationals and a bunch of the homies. And like, I wasn't nervous at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different because when we do the jams and they're like in the private setting, when we do it with Quincy or George or any of these people or done a bunch with Sticks, right? Like, those are, it's easier to, cause it's like, you know, oh, this can be 3 hours or whatever. We can just go and it's like, all right, I want to make sure I get everybody up, all these people. But like, it's not like when we have a festival set and it's like 75 minutes.
Right.
Starts at 6, ends at 7:15.
Yeah.
Ends, right? Mm. With a throw and go. You know, these festival throw and goes are no sound check, just doing a line check.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I've done throw and goes festivals a million times on tour. Completely different when it's like 20 musicians not playing rehearsed music.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not an ensemble with the same in-ear guy that you always have, right? It's like different monitor. It's like you know, everything kind of pieced together.
Right on.
But I, even with that, I don't get nervous at the jams.
So you got that confidence, man. That's beautiful. I don't know.
I don't know what it is. I mean,
the Zildjian 400 thing was scary because I'm playing a tune that Omar played on a Scofield record, you know, and
in front of him,
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, and
with every other great drummer watching,
and you know, and they all know, you know, Dennis knows everything Omar played on that record. So, you know, so I just felt the pressure of that. Like, please let me pay tribute to this in the right way. Shout out to Omar Hakim.
Nicest guy.
He gave me a nice, you know, consolation handshake after. Good work, man. I was like, oh, thank God.
Thank God. Yeah.
But, you know, that's when you get it. When it's, you know, when you're paying tribute to someone and their life's work, you want to do the best. So I guess that's what made me a little nervous. I don't know.
I understand.
Yeah. Lettuce gigs. No nervous. I'm good.
It's 35 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. I wrote the tunes. It's like an old glove, you know, you just get in there and do it.
So yeah. So both of your parents, music educators, drummers, mm-hmm. you grew up in a super musical household. Mm-hmm. You know, today I feel that music education is more important than ever, mm-hmm. right? How much changed your life, absolutely. My life. It's everything. I can't imagine not learn music as a kid. Mm-hmm. So yeah, what do you think? Like, so right now we're doing a big push right now to try to get more music education in schools.
I love this push. You know, I'm down with this.
And you're the guy, right? I know it. And we got the state of California is now behind it. And there's this whole Proposition 28 bill that has passed.
Can we do that? A round of applause real quick. Yeah. Yes. Teach the kids, man. Like, get good teachers, get people in front of them that are fun and can inspire. You know, that's the most important thing.
Yes. So I feel like my thought is that there's going to be, or that there are, and it's already being proven right now. We have 3,000 artists that have already signed up on School Gig that are interested in teaching.
Yeah.
Because we got to make more teachers, mm-hmm. right? There's not enough right now. So now there's funding from the state to hire these teachers.
Yes.
Who are the teachers? Yeah. Right. So as a call to action from you to a musician that may be interested in doing a, you know, career change, right? Mm-hmm. Or having a new opportunity of like, hey, you can make a steady income right now, still doing music, but you're teaching the kids.
Absolutely.
For 4 hours a day, 6 hours a day, right? And then go and play at night still, do mm-hmm. your gigs. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think about that? Like for, to any musician that might be interested in teaching?
It's a glorious profession, teaching. My parents... It always keeps coming back, like students that, you know, graduated music colleges coming back to my mom. Thank you for being the original inspiration in my life. Thank you for realizing I had talent when my parents didn't.
Wow.
You know, sometimes a really talented kid is born to doctors or to people that don't know if their kid is good or not.
Yeah.
And it's up to a musician or a music teacher to recognize that talent. I think that's one thing my mother was always great at. She was setting me up with bands when I was 5, 6, 7 years old of kids that she was teaching because she knew that they were great before their parents did, before anyone had given them. She was like, you have great ears. You have great time. So they really, you know, they taught me how to do that and how to recognize talent and how to know certain kids like deserve that push. They deserve to know that they are good. And they have something special. And if they work and they put the work in, that they could do music, you know, that they could become musicians and do this for a living.
Oh, it's amazing. Well, big shouts to your parents. Mm-hmm. Your parents, I can't wait to meet them. By the way, can I meet your parents?
Absolutely, man. They're like the parents of the scene. They're like, you know, they're amazing. And they love to play and hang and jam. And I want to bring them to a jam. Mom will definitely play and groove everyone out the room.
Yeah. Oh, I'll be like, bring your Gretsch snare, Mom.
Yeah, bring the Gretsch snare, Mom. Come on.
Well, dude, thank you so much for coming here.
Thank you, Bo.
You're the man. Love you as a drummer. Love you as a friend. Great guy. Adam Deitch, ladies and gentlemen. Come on. Come on. Adam Deitch.
Thank you. I appreciate you, brother.
Go see every single Deitch project. Mm-hmm. Check out the Deitch Academy, mm-hmm. which is awesome, man. So, yes. Much love, man.
We got a new Lettuce record coming out real soon.
Let's go.
And you know, just we're gonna keep making these records and keep hitting the road and getting in front of people and doing it live.
We gotta do the Adam Deitch jam. get Lettuce up there.
Yes, bro.
Get up. Just get all your projects.
Make it happen.
We could do it like Jules Holland style, but all your projects.
Wow. I'm down.
Go all right, I got to find the money. Let's go. Adam Deitch, ladies and gentlemen.
Go with Elmo. 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 Go with Elmo.
This is the stuff, man.